back to the Jeff Porch Show at FN Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this, what's left of this Monday morning. If you want to get in, there's still time, 251-343-0106. Be dark. Public schools ain't nothing but a free daycare. Both parents working and paying taxes so they can brainwash your children. Unnamed texter. They go after the people that do the most. Trump, Lincoln, JFK, RFK, MLK, Gandhi, Pope, John Paul II. And one more here before we get to our next guest. Keith, my buddy, was a concierge at the Mona Leon Hotel in New Orleans after Katrina. Secret Service secured the second floor and changed all the carpet and the mattresses in the penthouse bedroom, all for Bush to stay there for one night. And it's just how things have changed. And is the Secret Service bureaucracy as bought into their mission as they once were? That's you know, I think a fair question to ask today, but we seem numb to it. Joining us now on the line, he's our state auditor, regular on this show. Always appreciate his time, but Andrew Sorrell joins us. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Happy to be on again with you.
Hey, thanks for making time. Well, it's the Amen Corner here, coming down the stretch. How you feeling about your election?
Well, you know, you always run a little bit nervous if you have an opponent. I have an opponent, a credible one with a lot of money. He's planning to outspend me about 7-1. So, yeah, certainly not taking anything for granted. That being said, I have a nice lead in the polls. I think the people of Alabama trust me. They've seen what I've done as auditor for the last 3.5 years. They've seen what I did in the Alabama legislature. I was rated Alabama's most conservative legislator 3 out of the 4 years that I was there. I've got a real record on fiscal discipline. I have slashed the budget of the state auditor's office. I'm probably one of the only people in government that actually requested a decrease to my own budget this last fiscal year. So I've done a great job tracking state property. You know, if you go look at our Jeff, if you're having trouble sleeping one night, go pull up our property loss reports for the state of Alabama. We got $1.3 billion in property, and we publish a quarterly loss report on our website. And the second fiscal quarter report just went up, and we lost just 50,000 of inventory out of $1.3 billion. And most of that was lost to a fire, which, of course, was unavoidable. So we're doing a fantastic job just losing a tiny, tiny fraction of Alabama's non-consumable personal property every year. We finished RFID chipping the entirety of state inventory. It was 300,000 inventory items. That has doubled or more the speed of our audits. We're on 4-day work weeks, so the employees are actually getting more auditing done when they're on site rather than so much drive time. So we've made a lot of good improvements in the auditor's office, and I'm running on my record, and hope that all of your listeners will consider voting for me again on May 19th.
Well, and so it sounds like things are going well in the auditor's office. We'll talk about this kind of first term, though, and you know, we're nearing the conclusion of it. Did it live up to your expectations?
You know, it did. It took me, I'd say, 4 to 6 months before I fully understood every aspect of the job. And, you know, when you bring new people into these constitutional offices, there's a learning curve. And thankfully, I had a great staff. Promoted Hope Scarborough to chief of staff. She's done a tremendous job for me. Pledged to stay with me the whole 8 years. So that was important to me. I wanted somebody who'd be with me the whole way through. Just lost my most senior employee. She had been with the office for 19 years, and she retired on April Fool's Day. In fact, I made a joke of it at her retirement party. I said that she had changed her mind and wasn't retiring. Everyone got quite a kick out of that. They all fell for it. But no, it was an April Fool's. She did retire, so we lost all that experience. But we've got enough people in the office who know what they're doing now. We've been able to backfill that position with another qualified person, again, at a much reduced pay rate. So, again, we're going to be able to cut the budget another $50,000 this year. Due to that retirement. So really, things couldn't be running any better. We relocated the auditor's staff. We were spending six figures every quadrennium on rent. And I worked a deal out with the governor's chief of staff, really my first month on the job, to let us move back into the Capitol. So we're back in there. I'm room S101 in the Capitol, and my auditors are down in the basement beneath the Secretary of State's office, and the rent's free. No utilities, no internet. Nothing. We pay $0 in rent, so we're saving the state money there. So really enjoyed the job and excited to be running for a second term. Hope the people of Alabama will give it to me. Out on the campaign trail, Jeff, I've been joking around and saying, you know, 5 of the 7 statewide constitutional officers are going to turn over this time because they're all term limited. So I've been joking around saying, hey, let's send somebody back to the Capitol who actually knows what they're doing. So hope we get to serve another 4 years.
Well, and you know, you've done the statewide circuit. Anything stand out about this cycle that's different than your last run statewide?
Well, you've got a lot of Trump endorsements in big races this cycle. That stood out to me. You know, you've got Trump weighing in on the lieutenant governor's race, the governor's race, and the U.S. Senate race. And I think that with the assassination attempt, I think that his endorsement is going to play an even bigger role. Of course, he doesn't weigh into the down ballot races, the ag commissioners, my race, the auditor's race, things like that. He doesn't choose to weigh in on those, you know, which is fine. But I did see, Jeff, a significant jump in the polling yesterday. I ran around a polling yesterday afternoon. And specifically in the U.S. Senate race, I saw a big jump. And I just wondered, did that have something to do with the Trump assassination attempt? And I don't know for sure. It's just a theory. But it's just one of the things that might explain why we saw so much movement in that race.
What do you think it's because the weird thing about this cycle, and you and I have talked about this offline, there's way more undecideds, or at least up until this point, than there had been in, you know, now look, you get low turnout in these Republican primaries, typical, I mean, relative to the, you know, general elections and whatnot. But in this, this has always struck me as odd, is in some of these races, as late as February, 50%, 70% undecided in these marquee races. I'm sure that was probably the case with yours. I don't know, that struck me as something that, you know, when Trump comes in and he endorses it, I think slowly but surely those undecideds are kind of breaking in his direction.
So, you know, I've been running weekly tracking polls the last few weeks, and what you're saying is spot on. Up until 7 days ago, the undecideds were very, very high in all the races, inexplicably high. Like, how do you have over 50% undecided in a U.S. Senate race where you have, you know, like eight candidates running and a Trump endorsement? I mean, it's just and millions and millions of dollars already spent. It was really kind of baffling me as an amateur pollster how that could even be. But that has started to change. I saw a significant move in undecideds, and I saw significant moves in at least three races that I polled yesterday. Between 8 and 10% of the undecideds have now changed and are decided, and I expect that will continue the next 3 weeks leading up to Election Day. I don't know why people were so tuned out. Maybe people are just burned out on politics. I don't know why that would be more so true this cycle than it was 4 years ago. But you're right. Every pollster I talked to was complaining about the high number of undecideds.
Yeah, well, I think it's, this is my theory, that the mediums have changed. The culture has changed subtly, but it's not so much that the people and their beliefs and values have changed radically. It's the platforms. It's where people get their news or their, where does the messaging land? How do you send that? And I think we're in a different world, and a lot of these consultants around Alabama now are kind of playing off a 2000 and maybe 15 playbook, and it's a different world now.
Yeah, so your theory is, in essence, we're not advertising to the voters the way they should be.
Or the right way, and I don't know what the answer is, but the message isn't getting to them like it once had. You know, everybody used to put so much stock in TV and getting up on air. But now, who still watches, you know, and it's not even this. It's not even that, you know, who watches the local affiliates. It's that now your digital advertising is your YouTube TVs and your direct TV streaming and, you know, Roku or whatever. That's where people are eyeballs, and they're not so much on, you know, they're over the air, over the cable advertising.
I think you're right. I think I'm just going to throw some numbers out there. Let's say that 4 years ago you had 50% of the voting base watching network TV, local news and stuff like that on a CBS or ABC affiliate or something. And maybe digital was where 25% of people consumed their news. And then the rest of the people you reach either through mailers or robocalls or whatever type method. And I think I would still rate network TV is number one, but it might only be 40 to 30 now instead of 50 to 25.
Right.
Or maybe 40 to 35. But if you are a candidate and you only have a set amount of money, let's say you only have $250,000, well, your $250,000 doesn't even adequately cover network TV. So you sure don't want to split your money between network TV and digital ads. So you end up just running it on network TV still and not doing any digital. And now 35% of people aren't even seeing your message at all. So your theory does make a lot of sense to me. It's quite possible. But would that be true in the bigger campaigns? I mean, would that be true in the U.S. Senate race?
I think so. Absolutely. You know, and I'll tell you, the other part of that is, now look, there's a big player, you know, involved here, but these guys, these consultants are looking at it. They're like, man, you know, people's eyeballs are on 100 different things on streaming because there's so many opportunities, so many options. So they've gone, a lot of these guys have gone all in on direct mail. Now, I think the direct mail thing, that it's so saturated. I go out to my mailbox and there's like two or three of these mailers, and it may not be landing like it once was. But I think because there's an awareness here that what we used to do isn't where the eyeballs are, but we know everybody's got to check their mail, that they're really going in bigger on direct mail for that reason.
Yeah, well, I think they're also going to go to direct mail because a lot of the mailers you're getting are from PACs. They're not from campaigns. They're from that American Conservative Fund, which is 100% gambling money. You know, it's the online game with the FanDuel, DraftKings, those type people.
But even the campaigns and that's why I said there's a big player, and they're certainly the lion's share, don't get me wrong. But I noticed this from, like, just candidate mailers. There's a lot more of that this cycle than, you know, you put aside the PAC ones. You're still getting more of this direct mail from these candidates than you had in the past.
Well, that's interesting. I have not noticed that. I'm not disputing that. But I do know that with PACs, you know, for a PAC to go up on TV, they don't get the candidate rate. So it's three times the amount for the PAC to run an ad than it is for the candidate themselves to run the ad. And for that reason, the PACs don't want to run the TV ads, whereas the mailer is going to cost about the same no matter who runs it. So I think they're opting for direct mail. But, I mean, your theory is there's so much noise that's like, hey, let's just go direct to the voter in their mailbox. You know, maybe so. You know, as a statewide candidate, a statewide mailer for me would be, you know, $200,000. So I can't afford a statewide mailer. So I don't fall into that camp.
Well, but it's in these races, a lot of the legislative races for sure, because you're not going to spend big on a TV ad that covers everywhere in your market. You're trying to, like, be very, very targeted. But the mailers, to me now, even in these statewide races, and then in the congressional election for sure, are way more prominent. Now, it may be because I'm down here in the South and we have a competitive congressional race, and they're targeting, obviously, those with a voting record, those who participate in the process, too, with their addresses. They know how to do it. But you know, if you're trying to find Jeff Poor and you're trying to, you know, get to him somehow, is he a Netflix viewer? Is he a Peacock or Apple TV? What is it? We don't know. But we know that he's got to check his mail, and that steers him toward that, I think, you know, rather than the other options.
That makes sense. The reason I'm disputing with you a little bit on your analysis is because I haven't gotten a single mailer this entire election cycle. So I'm in a totally different part of the state than you. We don't have a really hotly contested congressional race. We don't have a hotly contested legislative seat in the district I'm in. You know, no state Senate, no state House seat races, anything like that. So maybe that's why, maybe that's the difference, but you may just live in one of the kind of hot spots in Alabama.
I mean, this was such a great point that you typically, when you run statewide, that you really focus on the Birmingham market, the Birmingham DMA, and I think you still do. But in our congressional district, we have a competitive congressional race, which could impact the turnout. You could see higher turnout than you normally do in AL1 because you have Congress on the ballot. So I wonder this, too, because you get a mailer from, like, one of the AG candidates or Wes Allen or, you know, some of these campaigns are doing direct mail, if they're taking that into account as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do think the turnout's going to be higher down south. You've got a contested sheriff's race, I think, in Mobile. You've got one in Walker County. You've got one in Lee County. Those always bring the turnout up. You've got another candidate for U.S. Senate, a leading candidate from the city of Enterprise, exactly like we had 4 years ago. Katie Britt's home county, Coffee County, had massive turnout. I think it was I don't remember, 45-50% turnout. It was just huge compared to the other county, double the turnout.
Yeah, and look at that state Senate race with Mike Jones and Josh Carnley. Any other circumstance, yes. Mike Jones probably the one, but Josh Carnley being the Coffee County guy wins a Senate seat off of that.
Yep, that's exactly right. And I did well in the Wiregrass, too. And the increase in turnout boosted me. I put a lot of money into Dothan DMA. So I think it helped me 4 years ago, too. So all these things are important factors that have to be considered.
Yeah, it's just it's such a strange election cycle. And, I think those hopefully your polling shows that these things are breaking one way or another. And we don't have to speculate which way they're going to go. Hey, real quick, folks want to find out more about your campaign, get in touch with you, talk about the auditor's race. How can they do so?
Yeah, please check out two things. Andrew Sorrell for State Auditor on Facebook, and then also AndrewSorrell.com, S-O-R-R-E-L-L.
All right. Hey, Andrew, we always appreciate your time. Best of luck, and maybe we'll get to you one more time before May 19th.
That sounds great, Jeff. Thank you.
All right. We got to get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.